Hello.
Hi, Charlotte.
Hi. I came from Ojai this evening. I'm Shyla. I'm an adult child of many alcoholics.
Hi,
Shyla.
Hi. This is my first time here. I have actually never been to a meeting in Santa Barbara. I've never been to a meeting outside of Ojai, actually, so I was really grateful for the opportunity to come and share here. So thank you again, George. I don't have a phone right now, but I got here. I was doing some circles, but I had my moment. I had my God moment where I just said, you know, like I feel myself starting to rage a little bit here, like ready to find the place. And then I just had that moment and then here I am. So I will share, I guess a lot. I'm going to say a little bit about my story, but you have a lot of time here to share. So I really appreciate that actually, because I feel like it's going to give me a good deep moment to go into her story. Oh. I was born in 1984 in Ontario, Canada, and I was born to two alcoholics who come from families of alcoholics. And why I chose them, I'm still figuring that out. But I grew up with a mother that was Native American, and we were raised next to a Native reservation where alcohol and drugs were used in large amounts. And so at some point in my childhood, I realized that it was really normal to be an alcoholic, and I had a moment of looking within to decide if that was something that I wanted to do in my life, if that's what I wanted for myself. And eventually it became clear, but I just remember there being a lot of confusion, a lot of conflict. There was no real deep heart connection between my mother and I, which I think has been one of the hardest things in my life. It's just been my continual, you know, sad story. So I lived with a lot of dysfunction growing up. I never really felt at peace, even as a child that I can remember. I just remember there always being conflict between my parents and I, even with my sibling, my younger brother, my cousins, friends. I constantly had issues with friendships, relationships, and I knew it. But I think I was too young to really understand a lot of it. So eventually, when I was a teenager, I saw a lot of my really destructive behaviors start to take place, such as a lot of lying when I was young, making up a lot of stories about my life and who I was, you know, just ridiculous things that kids wouldn't even believe. So I don't know who I was trying to fool, but this was me constantly searching for attention, and just lied about everything. Didn't really matter. I started stealing very young, stealing from my parents, stealing from stores, stealing from neighbors, friends. It didn't really matter. I just became absolutely addicted to it. Cheating in school, just running away from home, just doing things to basically get my parents' attention. And I believe that one of my traits is, you know, I had a really intense addiction to excitement my whole life. And in some ways, I still do a lot. I seek out excitement in ways that I know are not for my well-being, my highest good. And I think I just spent my teenage years pretty much just acting out my rage and my confusion and a lot of hate towards my mom. And I eventually got to a place where I started to make some changes in my health as a teenager. I had my god sister, my oldest cousin that I looked up to, was vegetarian, and I just wanted to be like her. So I went vegetarian when I was 15 or 16, and from that point I started to feel like I was making choices for myself that were actually for my highest good, and really separating myself finally from my family of origin, where I began just making healthier choices with my diet, with my lifestyle. I definitely still had my dysfunctional, you know, baggage that was just kind of sitting there, like waiting to, you know, come up at any time. But I think for me, the idea of just, you know, moving out, getting away from that vibration in my household was like, that was my ticket to freedom. So at 17, I moved out. I moved in with a girlfriend in my last year of high school. I was working two jobs, finishing my last year of high school and living on my own, paying my own rent. And it was very liberating, even though it was difficult. I didn't care. I could have taken on another job. I was just out of that house. And you know, from there, I just, living with this woman, she was a lot older than me, and she inspired me, and she taught me about a lot of things, and she was one of the first people, you know, that told me that, you know, hearing my story was like, wow, you know. She was also Native, and so she comes from the same dysfunction, but she had a more wholesome upbringing, so I think she was taking kind of this older sister presence in my life and trying to guide me in a direction that would, you know, bring me to happiness and health. And so we started, you know, looking at what I could do with my life, and there came this moment of like when I graduated, of if I were to go to college and pursue something that I was mildly interested in, or move away and travel and just be free for a little while. So knowing me, this is one of my pattern things, is that I wait until the very last minute to make a decision of when, like on the day of the deadline where I would have to, like, you know, enroll for college and everything. And my heart wasn't in it. It wasn't a difficult decision for me. I just decided I wasn't going to go to college, and I was going to just pack up and leave that town. So something miraculous happened where a friend of mine in high school, his older brother happened to drive a transport truck all the way from Ontario out to Alberta every week, and I forget what he was bringing there, but he was like, oh yeah, I'll hook you up with this ride, you'll get a free ride out there. And I thought, wow, this is pretty amazing. So here I went packing my stuff, and you know, it was winter in Canada, so I packed my snowboard and just packed all this shit that I didn't need and just took off, and I said bye to my parents. And I went out west, and I didn't know anyone. I didn't have that much money, but I stayed in a hostel, so got myself a job, started partying. Just, I was still drinking at the time, very, very little. I never really did drugs or drank growing up because I was terrified of becoming my mom. So that was one decision that I made that I know has really benefited me in my life. And once I got there, I started to feel myself needing a more tranquil experience, because I was raging it pretty hard there. It was just kind of the lifestyle. It was a younger crowd, lots of tourists, lots of college people. And everybody kept telling me, go to British Columbia, go to BC, you know, that's where everybody has dreadlocks and smokes weed and, you know, does all these hippie things. So I was like, all right, that sounds great. That's what I need. I was like the hippie kid in my family. So I went there and I felt at home. I saw people that really inspired me, women especially, that were raising their children in a completely different way that I had ever seen in my life. My mother actually was a highly functioning alcoholic that owned a daycare in our home. So I was constantly around babies and children my whole life. So I learned to, you know, do diapers and the feeding and cleaning up and all this. So so I was about 18 at this point, maybe 19, 18. And once I got to BC, I felt a lot of things, just felt a lot of greatness coming my way. I just felt like I got to a place where I found this, you know, this inner peace and this happiness I hadn't really felt in a very long time, if ever. And so I told myself I was going to, you know, live there, build a life, have my children there. Anyway, being the free gypsy I still was, I managed to find some people to connect with there and started just kind of hanging out, becoming part of the community, and there was a logging protest that was happening because they were, it was an American company, actually, and they were cutting down the huge trees of the forest there, and I was arrested at this protest, and I had 6 months to be able to come back for my court date. So I thought, if I have 6 months until I may have to go to jail, I should probably travel and, you know, see the world while I can, even more so than I just had. So I came down to the United States, and I came in on a birth certificate, and I think my health card, photo ID, and that was 10 years ago. And I, where did we go? Oh, I went all through the States, just in a big hippie caravan with a bunch of people, and we went down to Mexico, went to some rainbow gatherings, these hippie gatherings, and just having the time of my life, really. I really had the time of my life. These are some of the most memorable years of my life because mom and dad were not in the picture. It was just about me. It was me and my freedom and really getting a taste of the life that I knew I was meant to live. So I went down to Guatemala. I hitchhiked everywhere. I hitchhiked back up from Guatemala through the United States and back up into this small town in British Columbia. I attended my court date and I was free. So I returned back to the United States on the same birth certificate, health card. Back then, I didn't need the passport. And I somehow ended up in Venice Beach. And the night I got there, I met the man that became my husband 4 months later. And the father of my child 3 weeks after I met him. So at that point, I committed to creating this new life for myself. I committed to making a family at 20 years old, becoming a mother, barely knowing this person. He was a musician and I'm a musician, so I fell in love with that itself and felt very supported by this man. And so we created a life together. And I did my best to support him. We were living in Los Angeles, like outside of LA, and I started to really experience the ultimate dysfunction come up in me in this relationship. As soon as I got pregnant, I feel like everything from my childhood started to come through, and I ruined that relationship. I ruined that marriage. Absolutely, just by not being able to see, I think, what I was doing. And I remember being about 8 months pregnant, and I was living in it was like a Krishna community there, and this is the place where I had my baby. I gave birth to her in the house, in the downstairs, the meditation room of this, it was a Krishna temple back in the 70s, I think, and so there was a man living there who wasn't a devotee, but one day I told him a little bit. He was kind of like, hey, what's your story, you know? And I told him a bit about my life. And as soon as I said, you know, my parents are alcoholics, he was like, oh, have you ever been to Al-Anon? I was like, no, what's that? And he said, it's these meetings where people go and you get to, you know, get support around that. And I thought, wow, that sounds great, but I'm fucking terrified of doing that right now. And I'm 8 months pregnant and about to have a baby. I don't really have space in my life right now to commit to anything else. So I put Al-Anon on the shelf for a little while, and it didn't take long for the ultimate dysfunctional Shyla to emerge after I had a newborn baby, because all of my everything from like the hypervigilance, just controlling everything, controlling my home environment, everything my husband did, everything I had to do with my baby, just drove myself crazy and him as well. So at some point said, yes, I know I need to go because this, I need to save my marriage. I need to do this, you know. I was only 21, still not really quite an adult at all, and had never really dealt, you know. I brought my baggage with me, but I never really ever had this connection, anything, and no closure with my parents. I just feel like it was just still all there, and I tried to just pack it up tightly and not look at it, and then it just all came spilling out eventually. So I Went to my first Al-Anon meeting at Topanga Canyon. It was warmly welcomed. I had my newborn baby with me, and I breastfed in all the meetings, and I did hospitality because I had to control what everybody ate and made sure it was all fresh, organic, locally picked oranges and all that. I loved it. I really, really loved it. It became like home. It became a place for me to just go and feel heard. But I did not get a sponsor in Al-Anon, and I wasn't able to really go as deep into myself as I could. And I kind of just went to the meetings and didn't really do anything else. So there wasn't really anything big shifting inside of me. And my husband could see that, and I could feel that, but I didn't really know what to do. And I remember one day I got the fourth step inventory book, Progress to Blueprint for Progress. That's right. I got that. I was like, sounds good, you know, and I'm filling it all out. Yes, no, yes, no. You know, I'm like, this is scary, but I'm just going to do yes, no, because I don't really have anything else to share. I wasn't looking deep enough into myself to really have this awareness to even, you know, answer these questions in full sentences. So I just kind of left it and was like, what is this about, you know? And I eventually stopped going because I moved from Topanga Canyon. We moved somewhere else because we couldn't find a place. Because we had to move out and travel because I couldn't live in the house anymore because the grass is greener in Northern California, and I had to just go travel there and, you know, leave behind our stuff. And it just got us into all these situations that were so unfavorable. And, you know, bless his heart, I just put that man through so much in that relationship. So we, you know, were homeless for a bit, and we found a place in Laurel Canyon, and that's where I was going crazy, and that's where I decided I wasn't willing to be married anymore, and I had to move, and I had to get into another relationship, and then another relationship, and another relationship, and, you know, move around place to place with my daughter, you know, was being a single mom, but was getting time to myself finally. So in that time that I started to have about a week to 2 weeks to myself without my child, I taught myself how to play the piano, which was something that I wanted to do since I was a child. We had an organ, and I remember playing it. And I'm a singer, so I really wanted to have an instrument. And, you know, guitar wasn't my thing, no other instrument, you know, and was really calling to me except the piano. So I taught myself piano, and I started to write songs. And these songs were so beautiful, and they were all coming through me one by one, one after the other. And the material, I feel like these, at this time where the songs came through, they're very positive, they're very beautiful, they're very pretty well written too for me, never having written songs. And I knew that this was God working through me in a big way. And just was open, so open, and just knew that I had to do this for myself and for other people. I feel like with every song, I was channeling some aspect of myself that was an aspect of being a woman, an aspect of just being a human, an aspect of being an earth lover, all of these things that I am. And then started identifying with being a singer-songwriter and kind of started stepping out and singing. I started by singing backup for certain people in their musical ensembles, and then eventually was ready to play on my own and do that. And it wasn't hard at all. People were receiving me really well, so I got a fan base in Los Angeles pretty quickly. And still not going to Al-Anon during this time. There wasn't as much dysfunction in my life because I wasn't in a close relationship. I wasn't living in a house with someone else that I could drive crazy. And so this was a good time. I feel like I was happy. I was more at peace. You know, just more peace, just more awareness. And then at some point, I got really tired of LA and I discovered Ojai. And I had to move to Ojai because there's so much food and water and beauty and magic and mountains and all these things that, you know, the earth lover in me wants to be around. So I made the choice to move to Ojai, and ex-husband was, you know, took him a little while to be okay with that, but we went back and forth for about a year. And I lived in Ojai, and when I first moved here, there I became close friends with a few people that are still dear to my heart, and that really warmly, you know, welcomed me. And so it wasn't a hard decision for me. Once again, it was just so clear. It was like, I need to be there. And someone caught my eye when I first moved there, and I fell in love with this person pretty quickly. And my daughter was 4 at the time. And I created another child about 3 months later after being with this person. This man was a man boy. He was 19 years old. I was 26. And his parents did not approve. Not a lot of people approved, actually, but I just followed my heart, and that's just what was. So I went through the most pain and suffering in this relationship that I'm still in today. And that's just amazing. I just have to say that is a miracle. This is a God miracle that I'm still with this person, that this person still loves me as much as he did when we were first together. So, and I gotta thank ACA for that. Nothing else, at my own will, but really ACA is the only thing that helped me through. So in this relationship, I noticed everything that I had done in the first relationship, my marriage, except I had a little bit more awareness, and this partner was pretty similar to the last, very peaceful, very opposite of me. You know, I've got this fire, very outspoken, just tell it like it is, just very expressive, very direct, and these men are so, you know, peaceful, quiet, don't say much, very reserved, very patient, very honest, sweet, you know, authentic. And these are the qualities that I wanted in men, because I knew it was the opposite of me. So it was like, I need this in my life to balance things, right? Well, made it really difficult to find the balance, but I know it's there. And with this person, I just went through a terrible, terrible time in my pregnancy. It was really emotionally difficult. All of my mother issues coming up, and the way I was born, she didn't breastfeed me, and you know, I had my baby at home the first time with a midwife, and this time I had to do the birth by myself. I had to have no doctor or midwife or nobody's hands or opinions or anything. I had to just give birth by myself, because that's just my path, that's just me, and I had to do that. So here I was preparing myself and going through all the same stuff that I did in my first pregnancy. My fears of the abandonment, all the controlling behaviors, my addiction to drama and excitement. It was, you know, creating conflict where it was not necessary. You know, all of these things that just caused so much pain that I was not able to see. It's a little bit emotional saying that, because it's been so hard to see how good I am at destroying what's good in my life. And so he stayed with me. He stayed as much in love as he could. He stayed by my side. And then one day, his mother handed my partner an ACA pamphlet and brought it home to me, and I'm just sitting there with my 3-month-old baby nursing and just crying, you know, not knowing what to do, and so scared once again. For me, it felt like, okay, I've already been to Al-Anon, I know, but as soon as I saw that it said adult children of alcoholics, I knew from that moment that there was something there for me that I was just scared, because I knew it was good. I knew that I was going to get something for myself there. So it wasn't a hard decision to say yes. And my partner came to me with my 3-month-old baby, my very first meeting in Ojai. And he came to the second meeting too. And then after that, he didn't come. But It's amazing. A lot of people even remember that day. Remember the day that I walked through and just sat there. My partner had dreadlocks and wearing our little cozy wool sweaters, all hippied out, and I had this little baby, and it's just, you know, it's so sweet, yet it was like so necessary that I was there and just was dragging him along. And that was 4 years ago, almost exactly. Five. Oh, yeah, my daughter is four now, so. So I committed. I committed to the program. As soon as I, you know, stayed in the first couple meetings and took it in, I just knew. I knew that that's what I had to do if I was going to live the life that I wanted to live, because I did not want to keep living my life like I did growing up. I was not going to do that. And I cannot even express hardly in words how much awareness ACA has brought to my life. Now I can look at things in a way I could never see before. I never wanted to see it. It hurts so much to look at that, to look at how I was behaving and treating the people that I loved. It's too hard to look at that. To even think about owning some of my behaviors, you know, toward my parents, because I was the victim. My qualifiers, they were the reason why I was, you know, doing fucked up stuff and needed all this attention and had, you know, dysfunctional behavior. So it was really hard for me to accept that I had a role in that. And so ACA has taught me that. I eventually moved out of the home where I birthed our baby on the floor. And that was one of the saddest, most heartbreaking things in my life. Having to leave that home that we had just built, it was brand new, and just, you know, we're going to create our life here. It's 10 acres of land that's all, you know, growing a lot of food, raising animals. It's a beautiful thing that we were creating, but I could not do it. I could not manage it. My life was unmanageable, and I had to get help. And I had two children, and I didn't have a driver's license. And I had to look for a place to live, and this is where I consider when I hit bottom. I mean, there were a couple bottoms there, but at this place it just felt like, wow, I am fucking desperate. I am so desperate and I need so much help right now. It's terrifying and it's humbling and it's amazing, you know, it's scary. It's uncomfortable to ask for this much help and feel so vulnerable, but at the same time, I had ACA. I had it. I had the program to help me at that time, because I don't know what I would do or what I'd be feeling had I not had, you know, a source, something to go to just say like, hey, I'm really not okay right now, but I know that it's gonna be okay because there is this energy in my life that wasn't there before. I don't have to go to my partner. My partner doesn't have to be God. God doesn't have to be all these things. You know, it can just be the essence of, you know, just me and this higher power guiding me. So I just stuck with it, you know, moving around place to place. I stuck with it. I never stopped going to meetings, even though I moved probably four times. In that time, I had more dysfunctional relationships or friendships. More dysfunctional relationships again. Opening the relationship to be polyamorous. All this wild stuff to just try to help, you know, keep the love there between us and not let my dysfunction affect the relationship too much. So it's been 5 years of learning and growing and being in love with this person who I feel has been someone that I've really needed in my life, because this person constantly reminds me of where I need to do better and to also, you know, love the parts of myself that I'm not loving. And there's been moments where I've wanted to label this relationship as dysfunctional, but I'm just at a place right now in this moment where I can just accept it as it is and just say, no, it's beautiful. This is what it is. Even if I do want to create a little bit of drama here and just push the buttons and do this and, you know, just see what I can test, see if they'll stick around or whatnot. And he's still there. It's amazing. It's fucking amazing. I just have to say that. So God bless all these people in my life. life that I've had to tolerate or not tolerate my behavior and call me out on it, because I really needed that. I really, really needed that. My parents weren't the right people to do that. I needed this time. You know, I've needed this much time. So I guess in March it'll be 5 years that I've been going to meetings, and I found myself an amazing sponsor not long after being in the program, and I got my workbook and I started my step work maybe three months in, and I was so excited to do this. I felt like the workbook was a homework that I, you know, that I wanted to do. It's like I never ever wanted to do homework growing up. I hated it. Couldn't stand it. Never did it. And this was like, wow, I'm so ready to write this shit down. Like, I've been thinking about this. It's been playing. It's been like live action being. Like, now I just get to record it and like write it and let it go. It was like, so I was very eager, very motivated. My sponsor liked that. And it works. It was working. It was working me so hard, just moving through it, you know. And something did happen around step 9, I will say, that really put me on hold. I had a hard time wanting to fess up to a couple people and admit about the stupid shit I had done. Mostly the stealing. It was really hard for me to admit that I'd stolen from people, because in my eyes, like, it's just something so low. Like, oh my god, how could you do that? You know? Like, and without judging myself too harshly, I just know that I've done a lot of stuff that's just not been okay. Not been in integrity and what people would call, you know, a friendship, a friend. So, with step 9, I you know, I was telling my sponsor, like, I don't feel ready to make amends to my parents. Like, I really don't feel ready. It's been, like, years of on and off communication. By the way, I have not seen them for over 10 years. They've never met my children. They've never come to the U.S. My mom's terrified of planes. My dad can't take the time off work. Whatever the excuses are, they're just as terrified as I am. I know this. Their inner children are just always active, you know, with me, and I feel like I've been mom a lot. I feel like I'm still angry about some things, and I feel like I'm in total acceptance and have so much more acceptance than I ever had, you know, just around who they are, what they came from, you know, what they've been through, and what made them make the decisions they did about how they raised me. But I don't want to be a victim in that anymore. It didn't really help. It didn't help at all. They couldn't receive that. They couldn't hear it. They didn't want to hear it. So I kind of gave up on that, and right now emails and Facebook messages seem to be the way to communicate with them, just to keep it light, because I want to get into all the deep stuff. I want to talk about all the shit that I've been through. I want to talk about my, you know, my real story. I want to talk about my feelings. I want to talk about my hurts. I want to talk about my struggles as a woman. I want to talk about anything that would help me relate to my mother. You know, because now I'm a mother, and I have more respect for her now that I'm a mother, but I want to share these things, and I can't. There's not really a place for that right now, anyway. I'm 31, and I feel like I have a lot more time. I have a lot more time to heal and mend this relationship, and I don't think it's really even up to me. I think that's just God will, you know, respond to both of our hearts when it's time for that. I feel the same about my father too, but it's like the mother relationship has that, like, that ability to bring something out of me that I don't experience with anything or anyone else. So, you know, it kind of hits home. Yeah, so how am I doing on time? You're gonna give me like a little, give me a little flash.
2.5 minutes.
Left? Wow, okay. Okay. So I'm now at this place where I see that it works if I work it, and when I don't work it, I can become a mess really easily. I can resort back to old behaviors and patterns very easily, because they're right there, pretty close, and it's really difficult making that conscious choice all the time not to do something that I really want to do, but know that it's only coming from that place of needing to just, stir the pot. I don't need to do that. It's fine. It's just slow cook. Like, you don't have to get anything going. Like, everything's okay. Like, I wish I could just, I need to write that somewhere, I guess. And my partner always tells me that, just like, stop creating a problem out of nothing. Stop. Just stop doing that. And it's really hard for me to hear that because I'm a little bit in denial that I'm doing that. But I see it. I see that I can do that just like that. So easy. Where something is okay and I can make it not. So I have a lot of work to do around all these little things. They're actually big things in my life because they can overrule all of the beauty. You know, I have the ability to sabotage anything good in my life. And that's difficult for me. So I'm so grateful that I'm here and just able to speak, you know, in this way where I can look at my life, and I'm still so young and I have still such, wisdom and experience and strength ahead, but right now my strength and hope is really just seeing that it is possible, that I can be the woman I've always imagined, that I can heal the relationship with my parents, that I can do the step work and just move forward in my life, that I can be successful. All of these things, I see that. But my practice is in remembering that and using the tools that this program offers to help me along the way. And I'm saying yes to that, and my higher power knows that. So I have no doubt that it is working in my life. I feel pretty complete. And once again, my name is Shyla. I'm in Ojai. I'm a musician. I play locally. If anyone ever wants to come out, I think you'll like the music. So there's a lot of it about God and love and just the beautiful things. I like to write songs about those things because I've been in enough negativity that I feel like the songs have to be healing for me and others. And thanks for welcoming me. Thanks, George. That's all. Yeah.